acorns are dropping off my Chinese house. Two ducks in my spyglass, fiery as a mouse. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing.
Welcome to Yarns at Yin Hu, a podcast about the fiber arts and other post-apocalyptic skills. Episode 89, I Weave, You Weave, Monday, September 7th, 2015. I'm your host, Sarah. You can find me on social media as Sarah Pomegranate. The Yarns at Yin Hu podcast has a Facebook page, and it's available on iTunes. Today is Labor Day in the United States, a holiday that's been around for over 100 years. And a little bit later in this episode, I have the Yarns at Yin Hu group on Ravelry has 484 members. Several folks have recently introduced themselves on the welcome thread. I'd like to say a special hello to Hockey Rachel, who is Rachel from New York, Joey Gibson from Grayson, Georgia, Greg, who is Knitting Daddy from Greensboro, North Carolina, Kay, who is Sonoma Mama from Windsor, California, Kunst Knit Karen from Iowa, Woolly Eyes, who is Kathy from East Hampton, New York, and Judy in the Dyes from Gainesville, Georgia. When the Yarns at Yin Hu group on Ravelry reaches 500 members, I will do a random drawing from the welcome thread, and the lucky winner will receive a $25 gift certificate to Etsy. So if you have been listening and you haven't already joined the group on Ravelry, join. And if you haven't introduced yourself on the welcome thread, please do that, and you'll be entered for the drawing. The Asymmetrical is 1 month over and 1 month to go. You still have until the end of September to post a finished object in the prize thread. There are some fantastic prizes available. All the details, photographs of the prizes, and other information, as well as six gorgeous finished objects, are posted in the threads on Ravelry. So go check it out. The back porch. I'm finally getting around to some holiday knitting. I spent a great deal of the summer not working on holiday projects, and that's not usually the way I roll, but some other ideas and projects sort of struck my fancy. So I'm using the fall to work on projects that are destined to be gifts for others. And this week, I completed not one, but two hats. I used the Rhode Island Red pattern. It's a stranded knitting pattern by Pam Sluder. It's a free pattern available on Knitty. I used US size 5 needles and Barocco Ultra Alpaca, which is their DK / worsted weight yarn, in a deep red and a winter white. The pattern is super charming. It's not too difficult, but I don't think this pattern is necessarily a good introduction to stranded knitting. Because of the way the design works, that there's this beautiful chicken, and then there's a little bit of other patterning detail. In order to get shapes like that, you need long stretches of either the main color or the contrasting color. And what that means is that you need to carry and catch the yarn that isn't being used in the pattern behind your work. That's more of an advanced technique, and it's easy for something to go wrong with that kind of work, because if you pull one strand of yarn too tightly behind your work, the hat doesn't stretch, and then it really distorts the design, and it can even make the accessory unwearable. So for this chicken, there are large stretches of the contrasting color where you are actually creating the image of a chicken on the hat. And then there are long stretches of the main color where it's the background behind the chicken. So definitely catching yarn behind your work is an essential skill for this hat. It's not impossible, but I think that beginner stranded knitting patterns often have, you know, two stitches of one color and then two stitches of another, and you're often just going back and forth between colors, and you don't need to do any of that carrying. I made a few modifications to this pattern. One is that I learned how to do a tubular cast on using Isolde Teague's long tail tubular cast on video. And because I thought the brim of this hat with a double thickness was a bit too tight, I used a 1x1 rib on the brim after the tubular cast on. I also took my pen to the chart for the chicken design, and I darkened in a few more spots to make the chicken a bit more robust. Finally, I used some additional crown decreases at the top of the hat so that it draws a bit more subtly and less abruptly to a close. Purchasing two skeins of the Barocco Ultra Alpaca, I had enough yarn for two hats. In one hat, I used white as the main color and red as the contrasting color for the chicken. And in the other hat, I did the opposite. And I still have a bit of yarn left over, not enough for another hat, but I do still have a bit of yarn left over. And I made both of these hats in the largest size. There's a child size and then there are two adult sizes. I had started with the smaller of the adult sizes, but for the stranded knitting, I feel like the hat just isn't as stretchy as hats normally are, and so I went with the larger size. Once again, that pattern is Rhode Island Red by Pam Sluder. And it's a free pattern available from Knitty. Ever expanding skill set. For hashtag Power Pantry, during the month of September, we are taking a look at the lunchbox and pantries that may be in place in your office, in your classroom, in your locker, in your car, in times when you are grabbing a bite to eat on the road, but you're supplying or stocking your own snacks and meals, not purchasing them out at a restaurant or fast food. And I've been taking a look at my own lunchbox and also the snacks that I stock at work, just things to keep me away from the temptation of the snack machine at work, and that can really sustain me over the course of the day. So for lunch this past week, I worked on Sunday, no, I guess it was Monday evening, to prepare some meals for the entire week. I think that's a really good strategy, because it keeps me from making poor choices at the last minute. The more I think in advance, the better things turn out to be. So I made several containers of a chia seed pudding using rice, coconut milk, and some shredded coconut to make it a bit more interesting. Each day I had fresh fruit to go with that. And I also had a bit of trail mix and an apple or other piece of fruit. And that was pretty good. I also stopped at the grocery store and stocked my office pantry with some coffee pods in biodegradable containers, as well as some healthy biscuits and whole grain crackers, and a few mints, some dried fruit, things that I could reach for if I were just a little bit hungry, need a pick-me-up during the day. So that's working well, and I look to try some additional recipes, and as the weather gets cooler, maybe take some hot foods to lunch. I don't have a microwave at home, but I do like using the microwave in the staff room on occasion to heat up some things and have a hot lunch during the day, especially when I have a very long day and I might be staying at the school until, you know, 9 or 10 o'clock some nights. Not frequent, but especially at the beginning of the year, there are some events where I need to stay and my commute is long enough that I don't really take the opportunity to go home between the workday and an evening event. And that means that I really need to be prepared with good choices. Otherwise, I end up doing something that's not so smart. The other thing that happened at school this week was that the art teachers had been working on cleaning out supplies and materials closet, and they discovered at the tippy top of a shelf in the cabinet a Leclerc table loom. This hadn't been used for probably at least 30 years. It was warped. There's a very small project that's already been woven that's on the cloth beam of the loom. And you can tell it was intended for use by multiple students because there is just an endless amount of warping threads on the warp beam of this loom. It's kind of dusty, and some of the levers are a little bit bent. I think it needs some oiling and it needs some attention. But they were talking about maybe pitching it, and someone said, oh, maybe Sarah wants it. So now I have in my office a Leclerc table loom, something I really knew nothing about. But the custodian who helped me to move it said, oh, I remember having one of these in the classroom. And I said, here, because he's a local guy who went to public schools in the area. And he said, no, it had been in his elementary school. He couldn't remember what grade, but it was definitely the kind of model that had been in many classrooms. And all of the children were expected to take a turn. And it was so charming because he remembered exactly how to do it. He went through all the motions of putting the shuttle through and operating the levers and pulling the reed forward to tap the weft in place. And he had forgotten a lot of the terms for things, but I started talking about it. And he said, oh yeah, oh yeah. Every child during the course of the day would be expected to sit down and do a little bit of weaving, and they would make these kind of communal woven objects. So I would really like to talk to him and try to prompt his memory a little bit more about that. But I would also like to get this loom to be functional. Like I said, it definitely needs some TLC. Probably the most troublesome part is that the levers that operate, I guess, the harnesses. I'm just used to using a rigid heddle loom, so I'm not up on all of the terminology, but there are these levers that I think should be simple to operate, and they raise and lower parts of the loom. There are four of them. They are very difficult to maneuver, and it's almost like an old typewriter. When the keys get jammed and they stick together, that's what happens with the pieces that are attached to the levers, is they don't move smoothly and then they tend to get jammed. So I would like to see if this equipment is salvageable and if we could get it into operation so that some of the students can use it, at least take a look at it. And in trying to identify what type of loom this was and seeing if I could find any kind of instruction manual online, I found quite a surprising amount of information. I believe that this is the Dorothy model, which is still being produced. It's still in production. It's made by Leclerc, which is a Canadian company. I found a manual and also historical information about this loom online. And Dorothy is an incredible, incredible person, really trying to improve the lives of workers. And I believe, I don't know if any Americans would have been served by the company she worked for, but certainly Canadians. So in Manitoba, there was the Searle Grain Company. And in the early 30s, there was an attempt by this company to think about ways that it could serve its customers besides just its grain operation. And by that, I assume it was purchasing up grain from farmers in the area. It's a very spread out rural area, a vast place. And so one of the ideas they came up with was a home weaving program that would provide farmers' wives with equipment and education and give them the means to earn additional money by weaving textiles and also by supplying themselves with textiles so that they could make clothing and other fabric goods for their families, which was, you know, this amazing and very imaginative philanthropical gesture. So over time, there were weaving classes set up, and then there was quite a demand for equipment and materials to do hand weaving. Dorothy was Dorothy Rankine, and she came to be the staff consultant and the operator at the Winnipeg office and gave advice and assistance to weavers. They had a program where you could purchase a loom, or you could sort of rent to buy a loom with no interest. And the grain company started supplying looms, Leclerc looms, many of them were Leclerc looms, and also yarns and threads for the actual weaving process. And Dorothy insisted on having a cone of each type of yarn that they sold available in the Winnipeg office so that the clients could come and inspect them and see what they were dealing with in terms of color and texture and consistency before they made a purchase. And she kept all of this on display. She also sent out a newsletter and provided other kinds of information and education for the farmers' wives who were weavers. And she just really worked tirelessly to promote weaving and the benefits of weaving to folks throughout the region. So I thought this was just an extraordinary story. And in the show notes, I posted this incredible photo of Dorothy sitting in front of this display of cones of yarn and thread, and she's wearing a suit that's made of hand-woven fabric. That's what it says in the caption beneath. This particular dimension of the Searle Grain Company continued until the mid-1960s. Also, I found out that following the war, there was some research and further promotion of the hand weaving department because it was felt that this occupation could benefit those soldiers and other workers who had sustained injury during the war and needed something to do and a lucrative occupation when they arrived home. I found this quoted material on the website. When the war is over, numbers of young women who have left the farms to serve in various war capacities as stenographers, clerks, and as members of the women's forces will be out of employment and will return to their farm homes. Home weaving would provide for them a very useful occupation. It is also thought that soldiers, when they are demoralized after the stress and strain of war, will feel an urge to do something with their hands. Many demobilized soldiers after the last war took up various forms of knitting, needlework, tapestry, and other forms of work. It is felt that a certain number of the demobilized soldiers who will return to their farms will find weaving a useful and satisfying occupation until they can be reestablished in a permanent occupation. The final thing I'll share with you today regarding weaving and this Leclerc loom is a PDF of a pamphlet I found that was instruction for hand weaving in classrooms. The pamphlet is printed in English and French. It's called I Weave, You Weave, a book for beginners. And I'd like to share with you the foreword of this text because I think it is just fascinating. Weaving may be the oldest craft. It evolved in many separate parts of the world even before man progressed from a hunting and gathering culture to a less nomadic life of farming. Perhaps surprisingly, the process of interlocking threads in an under-over-under fashion has not changed appreciably in the interceding 20,000 years. To be sure, in the past 200 years, the machine age looms of industry have eliminated the need for families to manufacture their own woven materials. But the Industrial Revolution has not created significant changes in the ancient technology of weaving. Mass production has, however, jolted the contemporary artist's attitude toward weaving. Formerly, weaving was primarily a utilitarian endeavor. Today, machines produce cloth. They can do it much more economically than the hand weaver. Thus, there is no need and no sense other than the gratification of doing for oneself to compete with industry in the production of cloth. The success of the machine has vitally stimulated the hand weaver rather than hindered him or her. Weaving is more exciting and more popular than ever before. With efficiency and sophisticated mechanization comes predictability. The machine's success is based on repetition and monotony. The hand weaver has been freed to create one-of-a-kind pieces which are unique in color, texture, composition, and structure. Keep this principle in mind when you are planning any project for the loom. Try incorporating stone, arftwood, shields, seed pods, bolts, feathers, beech glass, dried grasses, fur, plexiglass, and other found objects in the weaving. Experiment with the unexpected. I just thought that was a fantastic introduction to weaving, but it holds so much truth and philosophy for all of the hand arts. Think about spinning, knitting. You always have those folks who see you knitting. I don't know if you've had this experience, but might see you working on something and say, why would you do that when you can just buy socks at the store, or you could just buy a sweater, or something along, some comment along those lines. And it's so difficult to explain if a person doesn't already have the mindset. It's almost like you're speaking two different languages to try to explain, well, it's not about that. It's not about needing a pair of socks. It's about wanting to take control of this process and participate in something creative and artistic. I think that's also a reason to celebrate the inconsistencies, I guess the mistakes of our own handcrafting process. It's a very important aspect of the lessons I would like to provide to the students with whom I work, to celebrate and appreciate the differences, the texture and variability in their own work, rather than to perceive it as a mistake. Of course, when you spin, the yarn you make isn't going to look like yarn you can buy at the store. But that's part of the point, is to appreciate and celebrate that. Double happiness. The last thing I want to mention on this episode was the lovely surprise of a recent woven project of mine being featured on the Community Eye Candy segment of Ravelry on the main page. Thank you to One Stitch Short, who selected my pebble weave scarf. It's a hand woven project made from a commercially spun yarn for the warp and some Corriedale hand spun for the weft. This washed up to be a lovely, soft, and very colorful woven scarf. A really nice project, but more importantly for me, the first project I've woven on a Cricut loom and that I can show my students as an example of the weaving they might do with the Cricut loom this year. This post was September 1st's post on Ravelry, and thank you to everyone who's given the project some love on my project page.
Acorns are dropping off my Jenny's house. Two ducks in my spyglass, fiery as a mouse. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. Leaves her down like a lady, waiting for a naked man. River bends like an elbow, turning stones to sand. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. Sycamore trees are blazing like a rainbow fire. Just like Linda Curtis, but out on a wire. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing.
Thanks for listening. Music for this episode is Sweet. Music and lyrics by Samuel St. Thomas, performed by Krista Long and Cesar Diaz. If you enjoy today's episode, I hope you will consider liking the show's Facebook page, joining the Yarns at Yinhu group on Ravelry, or leaving a star rating or a review on iTunes. Eat well and stay strong as you hone your post-apocalyptic skill set this week. Country mile, it's a subway nature thing. It's a subway nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing.